much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Welcome back, everybody, to one of the most unusual and inspiring shows on the radio. It's a show that shines a light on people who are living lives of purpose, passion, and adventure, and tries to prove how easy it would be for you to do the same as well. Of course, it's called Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. That guy over there is Bill Schaefer. Give us just a few minutes, if you will, and you will see for yourself as we bring in world-renowned experts, best-selling authors, and ordinary people who are living extraordinary lives.
And as you know, Growing Bolder is a radio show, but it's also a TV show, a magazine, and a website, all of which offer you hope, inspiration, and possibility. In fact, in the next hour, one of our guests rocketed to stardom in the 60s as the star of the TV show That Girl. Marlo Thomas is here to talk about how she reinvented herself and how you can do it too. We'll also meet a sports broadcaster who's been behind the same mic for over 60 years. Anybody remember the lead singer for Earth, Wind, and Fire? Philip Bailey joins us with his incredible story of success and an author who will tell you how doing less can actually lead to more living. Amazing people, amazing stories. It's time for Growing Bolder.
Well, folks, you don't need us to tell you that we are living through a very unusual time in our society. There's a great deal of poverty, illness, and heartache, but there's also more technology, possibility, and opportunity than ever. Opportunity to change your life, to reinvent yourself, and really to make a difference in ways that simply didn't exist even a generation ago. Our next guest is a great example of that. She went from a household name and star of her own television show to become an award-winning actress, and then she set her sights on becoming one of the driving forces behind St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and reinvented herself again to become a best-selling author.
Oh, and those awards Mark was talking about, how about four Emmys, a Golden Globe, a Grammy, a Peabody Award, and a place in the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. Even as an author, she's written six bestsellers. Today, we're going to talk about number seven. It's called It Ain't Over Till It's Over, Reinventing Your Life and Realizing Your Dreams. Anytime, at any age. It's Marlo Thomas. How are you, Marlo?
Hi there. I'm great, thanks. How are you guys this morning?
It's great to hear your voice. I mean, it's like having an old friend back.
Thank you.
You know, the book is amazing for many reasons, but one of our favorites is that you're telling everyone something that we try to convince our listeners of every single show, that it is never too late.
I know. You know, I travel around the country raising money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and everywhere I go, I meet women who say to me, it's too late, isn't it? I say, of course not. Of course it isn't too late. If you're 40 years old, you could have 50 years left. If you're 50, you could have 40. If you're 60, you could have 30. That's a lot of time to do a lot of things and make a lot of dreams come true. And it's exciting. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this book was because I wanted other women, and men can see it too, but I wanted to have these stories encourage people to see that, yes, you can start over at any age, and you don't have to do it alone. You can do it with a friend or with your sister or your mom or whoever you want to do it with. Start a new business. And all these women, 60 different women, have 60 different stories of how they did it. And one of the things that they did that I love is that they started small. You know, you can dream big, but start small. Work small, one step at a time, and you'll get there. You can't get there overnight, and I think what happens to a lot of people, they get daunted by the fact that, how will I ever do it? But if you do it one thing every single day, you will get there.
You know, Marlo, we want to talk more about these women that you profile, but we also want to talk about you because, you know, it seems like some of us, men or women, you don't get it naturally. You know, we know that the end is not here, that we continue to reinvent ourselves. Others have got to be convinced by people like you. How did you come by this? Was this something you learned from your father? I mean, you achieved so much success that I don't think anybody would find fault with you just sitting back and saying, you know what, I did my thing. I'm going to chill for a while, but yet you're still out there in the front lines trying to make others better.
I think the only difference between me and other people is we all have a lot of ideas. I get excited by ideas, and then I want to make it happen. You know, if somebody comes to me with an idea and it sparks my imagination, I always say, well, let's do it. Let's do it, and let's make it big. Let's do it and make it as big as we can. I like the idea of making waves and, you know, throwing pebbles in the ocean and seeing the, you know, the ripples of the pebbles. I just like to say, I like to make waves and I like to be a part of the traffic. It's just fun. For me, it's the fun of life is and also being with other people. I love working in a community. I'm doing a play. I start in, I think it's July 10th. I'm working on this play, and I love the community of a play. You know, it's a company, four actors, a director, the writer, the stage hands, and we put on a show. You know, it's fun to do. My website, marlothomas.com, there are six of us that work on that, and we put out about 80 pieces of content a month, and it's really fun. It's exciting to do. It's like running a little magazine of our own on the web. But the great thing about the web is you don't have to have a storefront. You know, that's what a lot of the women in the book figured out, that you don't have to pay rent on a store. You could actually make something and sell it on the web and make a lot of money.
Marlo, when you go around and you talk to people about this, nobody disagrees with you. No, everybody says, oh, yeah, we agree. It's never too late. But obviously there's something there. Have you found from talking to the women that you did, what is it that holds us back from trying?
Fear.
Really?
It really is. It's fear of failure. And how do I start? You know, a lot of women say that. How do I start? And that's why I wanted to write the book, because I think if you look at the stories, you'll see how people start. Some of them, these women started from nothing. I mean, one woman had to give up her apartment. She got laid off. She gave up her apartment. She slept on the sofas of her friends' apartments. She sold all her good clothes on eBay and scraped enough money together to start a little business. I mean, one woman was in her 30s. Her husband died. She had three little kids. She had no idea how to make a living. It was not in her mind at all. She had her hands full with three little kids. But she used to like to make jewelry, and her friend said to her, why don't you sell the jewelry that you make? So she said, well, let me try. So at night after her kids went to bed, she'd sit up all night making earrings and nose rings and bracelets and necklaces and all ankle bands and all kinds of things. And she took it to a store in her area, and they bought some. And then she sold it on eBay and Etsy and all these different places, because you don't have to have a storefront. She made a lot of money. Now she has a business. I mean, another woman, her friend was in the hospital about to have a baby. And she had been laid up, you know, protecting the birth for about a month. She'd been in the hospital, and she said to her friend, God, I'd give anything if I could have a manicure and a pedicure. I feel so grubby. So her friend is Ohio. They were in Ohio. Her friend said, well, let me see if I can get somebody to come to the hospital. She couldn't find anybody and gave her an idea for a business. And she created a business called Nail Taxi. Hmm. She went to beauty school, and she and all her girlfriends went to beauty school. They all had cars in Ohio. And they started this nail taxi business where they would go to hotels and do people's nails and bridal parties and all kinds of different slumber parties, hospitals, elderly homes, all this stuff. She now has Nail Taxi in 11 cities, and she's making a fortune. Now, who would have thought that?
Folks, we're talking to actress, author, humanitarian, philanthropist, you name it, Marlo Thomas. And, you know, Marlo, I don't imagine too many people can talk to you without mentioning your father, Danny Thomas, who was just such an icon. We put motivational graphics on our Facebook page occasionally. One that we put up was a quote from you where you said, my father said there were two kinds of people in the world, givers and takers. The takers may eat better, but the givers sleep better. We got
right.
Such a response from that. Did you learn about giving back from your father?
Oh, my father, really, we learned by example, all of us, my brother and sister and I, we all learned by his example. He would stop at a traffic accident, you know. I remember as a little girl, him jumping out of the car before there were cell phones, you know, looking for a payphone to call an ambulance or call a doctor or something. The change would be falling out of his pockets as he was running to find a payphone. He really saw himself as part of a community, a part of a neighborhood. You know, the neighborhood just happened to be the whole country. It's just how he saw life, you know. And he, by example, he showed us that's the way to be. I remember once we were driving back from Mass, me and my dad were in the car, and these boys were beating up on another little boy up on Sunset Boulevard. My father pulled over the car, and he got out of the car, and he pulled the boys apart, and he gave them a talking to, and the kid that was being bullied, we put him in the car with us, and we took him home. And my dad said to me, I hate a bully. And, you know, that's just it. I mean, some people hate a bully and see it. He got out and did it. And that's just who he was. Yeah. And that, I think we all learn from that, you know.
Marlo, in our last 30 seconds or so, are you a happy person these days?
I am. Well, you know, I've got a really nice marriage. We're about to celebrate our 34th wedding anniversary, me and Phil, on May 21st. And that's sort of the place where you find your happiness mostly, I think, with your family life, your home life. And so it's a place that I retire to at night and spring out of in the morning. And we have a good time. We have a very good time together. And all the work I do, you know, that's my personality. I'm a type A type personality. I like a lot of work. But we also have a lot of downtime. We're going away for 12 days in June, just the two of us together, just to have some time off before I start the play. So we find, I think that's the secret of our marriage, is that we find time always for each other.
Well, happy anniversary to you, Marlo, and thank you for using your name and your celebrity to try to make a difference in the lives of other people. The book is called It Ain't Over Till It's Over, written by Marlo Thomas, who happens to be a pretty inspiring person herself. Best of luck with the book, Marlo, and you are so right. It is never too late. Up next, talk about longevity. We'll visit with a radio sports Iron Man who has set a record that may never be broken. This is Growing Bolder.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for our latest stories, reels, and motivational memes.
The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. You're listening to Growing Bolder with Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton. Ever make a decision in your life with no idea where it was going to lead you?
Our next guest did exactly that. He took a job, not really because he wanted it, but just to hold him over until the right one came along. Only it never did. And there are millions of hockey fans out there who are sure glad it didn't.
Long shot on goal, rebound up front.
It was 1953 when anyone tuning in a Fort Wayne Comets hockey game on 1190 WOWO first heard this voice.
He has for center, Victor to Ablett. Ablett, shoot, score!
No one could have guessed, not even the man himself, that he would do something no other sports announcer has ever done. With just a few exceptions, he would call every game they would play for the next 60 years. At the age of 86, Bob Chase is the most remarkable man in sports.
Here we come, good forecheck that time. Britton with the puck down deep inside the lone, sends it out behind the net, up the middle to drive, score! It is Beauregard, first goal of the night. Comets on the board, and that came at 6:32.
It's so amazing because when I started, I had no intention of even being a sports announcer. It was a temporary job until a real job showed up for me.
While Bob was doing play-by-play and waiting for that real job, he did have other duties.
I was a disc jockey for a number of years, at one time ranked in the top 10 in the nation. I was a sports director of the station until I retired 3 years ago. And we did it all.
Including an interview with a rising young star named Elvis Presley.
And that was just another case of being in the right place at the right time, because the people who owned the hockey team promoted the Elvis thing, and only two people were allowed to interview him, and one of them certainly was me. And it was a very exciting time when he was on the rise, and one of the nicest people I had ever met.
But it always seemed that he fit best high above a surface of ice using his voice and his mind to bring Comet Hockey to life for his listeners. No, it wasn't the NHL, but it did have its advantages.
The fact that I was in a minor league setup gave me opportunities to be around people that I really enjoyed. They were young people. The kids were all trying to go someplace. Nobody had an ego problem. And they were playing for peanuts, so if they didn't love what they were doing, they wouldn't be there. And it made it an awful lot of fun.
Oh, it's hot and I'm old.
Yeah, there you go. I know how you feel about old.
So much fun that even these days, he has to watch his back.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, I'm one of the guys. I mean, some of the junk they pull on me on the bus and elsewhere, you got to be ready for it, I'll tell you that.
Britton in the zone, stops just inside, dumps it off behind the net, around behind the goal, picked up. All right, nice move.
There was one thing Bob was not ready for. See, when you toil in the minor leagues, you don't get much recognition. But out of the blue, Bob was awarded the highest honor possible by the National Hockey League.
I'm driving out of Huntsville, Alabama, pulling a 9-ton fifth wheel with an old Ford dually. Phone rings, Murph hands me the phone, and the voice said, "Oh my goodness, am I happy to be in touch with you?" And I said, "Yes, who is this?" And he said, "Well, my name is Bettman." I'm going, "Whoa, Gary Bettman, yes, sir." And he said, "I'm telling you, I didn't know you were on vacation. I finally got your cell phone number, and I want to be the first to let you know that you are the recipient of the Lester Patrick Award." Now, I'm driving up the highway lined with semis, and we're all running 75 miles an hour. So the next thing, tears started coming. And I told him, I said, "You just hang on a moment till I compose myself, please. I'll be with you in a moment." All the way home, the rest of the way, about 500 miles, I'd look at Murph and I'd go, "Wow." Now, I know it's there because the trophy's up on my mantle. And I know I've been there and I've gotten some incredible response from people all over hockey. But it's humbling.
Humbling. Especially when Bob remembers how it all nearly came to a sudden end 16 years ago.
It was a nice warm spring day and I was out washing the car and all of a sudden I started getting these wild pains through my arm and stuff and I was just shaking.
He was rushed to the hospital. Before he knew it, he'd undergone quadruple bypass heart surgery.
My cardiologist walked in and at the foot of my bed the next morning he said, "How you feeling, Bob?" And I said, "Really good, Doc." He says, "Well, I got a test for you, RETIRE. What does that mean?" I said, "I didn't hear that. What was that?" And he said, "Are you thinking about retiring?" And I said, not yet. Wait till I recover and see how I feel." And I have never felt any better in my life than I have.
You don't believe in that word, do you?
No. Someday I'm going to leave. But retire, I've seen so many people and friends of mine as well who could hardly wait for the day they qualified. And a year later, they're saying, "The worst thing I ever did, I wish I'd never retired."
And with 50,000 watts of radio, we were heard all over.
Yeah.
Plus, if he would have retired, he would have missed out on one of his all-time favorite moments. You see, one of the young boys that grew up listening to Bob on the radio followed in his footsteps. His name? Mike Emmerich.
And but look what has happened to him. He's grown into the lead hockey announcer in North America. And he's a little American kid from just west of Fort Wayne, Indiana. Not bad.
So I finally got to be like Bob. Nobody's going to beat Bob, but I got to be like Bob.
The top announcer in the game today says Bob was his inspiration. And it's hard to tell who was more excited, protege or mentor, when for the first time ever, the two did play-by-play together.
Oh, it was unreal. We never dreamed this would ever happen.
I could understand Mike being excited because here's the guy who sparked the dream that became a reality for Mike. But Bob Chase was just as excited.
Oh, yeah.
To be with Mike
Emmerich. In fact, the best time I had was in the second period when I sat back and listened and just listened to him. And then I knew why he was who he is. Really, really talented.
Do you feel, Bob, that he's carrying on your legacy?
Yes. And he's put me where I wouldn't have gone. He's my rep in the National.
He's taken the next step. You could have retired 20 years ago. Why are you still doing it?
Well, probably if I'd had a job, I'd retire. I never had a job. You know, this has been a labor of love all through the years. I wake up every day looking for what's next in the line of experience. And I just enjoy doing what I do.
Back up they come. Comets chase this one down. His chalk still got it. Can't hold it in the zone.
But Bob knows full well that the scoreboard clock always ticks down. That makes him cherish his work even more.
I know soon I'm going to have to leave it. Murph and I need a couple of years just between the two of us to travel and have fun. And she insists I don't stop. She wants me to keep going. The hockey club told me if I decided to retire, they wouldn't let it happen. What they would do, they'd hire another man working for their PR and sales group. He would do the road games and I'd do the home games.
Not a bad deal.
Not a bad idea, you know. No more bus trips.
86, and he's still looking forward, but also looking back at a record-setting career, the likes of which we will never see again. The experiences and friendships that shaped it, and the humility that defined it. Thank you, Bob Chase, for reminding us it's not what we do as much as what we bring to what we do that makes for a meaningful life.
I could not have planned or in any way put together my life. It happened day by day, week by week, some highs, some lows. The whole thing kept together through it all by my wife. And here we are, you know, and I am so happy and pleased and in peace with myself and with my family that I don't know what else I could add except to say thank you, Lord.
What a humble and gracious man he is, and a great reminder that sometimes it's not about what you do for a living, it's how you approach it, how much you respect it, and how much of yourself you give to it.
Yeah, and a great example, Bill, of just going with the flow. As you said, he had no idea this was going to be the thing that would define his life. Now in his late 80s, to still be riding the team bus, hiking from the hotel to the rink, still enjoying every moment, well, that's three pretty important ingredients that will turn an average life into a memorable one. Bob Chase, folks, the voice of the Fort Wayne Comets, that is one unforgettable guy.
Up next, the voice of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and this song with Phil Collins, how Philip Bailey truly became a shining star. This is Growing Bolder.
Embrace the health and longevity movement with the Fountain of Youth monthly e-newsletter. Growing Bolder and the National Senior Games Association have teamed up to bring you the latest videos, podcasts, and articles on inspirational masters athletes and the many benefits of physical activity delivered right to your inbox. Just go to nsga.com/connect to sign up for free today. The Fountain of Youth, because if you want to keep moving, you have to keep moving.
The studio is jamming right now, folks. You are listening to Growing Bolder with Mark and Bill, and what a great song and what a great message. Shining star for you to see what your life can truly be. And you know, Bill, that really is the essence of what Growing Bolder is all about.
You know, I never thought of it that way, but that's an excellent point. It's also the essence of what one of the greatest bands of all time is about. Earth, Wind, and Fire has been rocking the world now for over 40 years, and our next guest has written a book all about his experience. It's called Shining Star. Here is the voice behind Earth, Wind, and Fire. We're really happy to welcome Mr. Philip Bailey to the program. How are you, Philip?
I'm wonderful. How are you guys doing today?
Man, it is so nice to be able to talk to somebody from this band that's been a part of all of our lives. You've written this great book now, and I'm kind of curious, what made you want to write it now? Why was now the right time?
Well, it really kind of found me. I was on tour with David Foster and met his agent from his was the agent for his book, and we just struck up a conversation and said that she would put me with two writers from the Bay Area that she that helped Alice Cooper on his book. And sure enough, that about that following year, she followed up and they contacted me. We started rolling tape, and you know, about a year and a half later, we went and got the deal with Penguin, and lo and behold, I did have a story.
The question is, do you have a story that can be told? You know, those were some pretty crazy times back in the day, weren't they, Philip?
They really are. You know, and the really, I didn't want a book that just kind of glorified all the highlights of my life, but I wanted it to be pretty, you know, as transparent as can be, with hope and possibility. And, you know, so I had to delve into some places that I haven't been in a long time and were somewhat uncomfortable. But if it serves toward inspiring someone that, you know, your humble beginnings don't have to define you or determine who you become or where you're going, then, you know, that's good, because that's really what the song Shining Star was about.
And there's so much in your book, too, Philip, about, you know, having to work together with other people that so many of us can learn from. You know, you said that early on you were a perfectionist, and it caused a lot of problems for you in the recording process. Is that something that you learned to change about yourself?
It is something that I learned, and it's something that I learned through the late Charles Stepney, who was a very, very talented man, a writer, producer, arranger, conductor, and you know, as talented as he was, for those things to come out of his mouth to say that, you know, as important as music is to all of us who were working, that it wasn't more important than relationships, was a real sobering moment for me. You know, it's like, wow, you know, okay, maybe I need to rethink this.
Folks, we're talking with Philip Bailey, the voice behind Earth, Wind, and Fire, obviously a great talent and now, understandably, a very thoughtful guy. You know, Philip, it's never easy to be the one making the decisions, and in your band, Maurice White made some brilliant ones, but also some that didn't sit quite so well with their group. How do you see Maurice in the rearview mirror now?
Well, I think that you do what you know, and as you're living, you know, you're living and you're growing, and you're making decisions based on what you know. And you know, because of he made, like you said, he made some fantastic decisions. He was our mentor in so many positive ways, but because of some of the things that we experienced that weren't as positive, you know, it really helped me to understand, you know, through the rearview mirror where he was, and some of the decisions that I make now and have made for the last 20 years in leading Earth, Wind, and Fire you know, not reckon the wrong, but to just make more of a positive influence. And that's something that he started out to do. That's something that the band was made for.
You know, the whole Maurice White story is kind of interesting, too. You guys having to deal with, you know, his struggles with Parkinson's. You know, the band's been together 40 years, but there were many downs as well as many ups. You know, there was a time when the people just got tired of hearing from the band. But you fought hard to hold it all together, even in the downs. Where does that come from, and what can we learn from you for that?
Well, it really came from the essence of the lyrics in the songs. One thing that the songs say, and the reason for the band, was to render a service to humanity, to give them a positive outlook, to raise their consciousness about themselves and spiritually as well. And so, you know, it's really about singing, being about what you're singing about. And then as I grew in my faith, I'm a Christian, I really begin to see that the whole was bigger than its parts, that Earth, Wind, and Fire really did have a very a mission, and one that was very positive. So that's the reason why 40 years later we can still draw now four, you know, generations of people coming to our shows and enjoying our music, and no one having to turn their heads or be ashamed of what's going on the stage, and people feeling better, you know, when they leave than when they came, you know, because of the positive message. And that's a big tribute to Maurice and his vision about what he wanted the music to be about.
The vibe is timeless. I mean, you guys are you know, still a pleasure to enjoy in every way imaginable. How old are you now, Philip, and what lies ahead? What do you still have left to do?
Well, I don't tell too many people. I just turned 63, May the 8th.
Yeah.
And I'm still touring the world and having fun. I'm actually working here in Vegas tonight, and then on to Chicago to do a date. But we'll be working through almost and through until Thanksgiving, you know. So we're on the road a lot. I try to make it manageable nowadays, you know. But I'm really blessed to have good health and strength and a good support system. And we're still having fun, and people are still appreciating the music globally. So we're somewhere on this globe, and the music is played every 3 minutes, some odd seconds, somewhere on the planet.
And good, Philip, to know that the voice of one of the greatest bands around is also one of the greatest guys around. Check out the book, Shining Star, Braving the Elements of Earth, Wind, and Fire. Our thanks to Philip Bailey.
Coming up, do you ever wish you were an artist? Rochelle Ford did, even though she had never even tried. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider Newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
I'm Bill Schaefer, along with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. And if you ever doubted that having a passion is what leads you to the fountain of youth, you would only have to meet 76-year-old Rochelle Ford to find out that, yes, that is true.
Yeah, she really is something special. When she retired from a high-profile executive position in her late 50s, she traded in her briefcase for a welding torch, of all things. And with absolutely no previous experience, she became a self-taught metal sculptor. And now, at age 76, her beautiful, bold works of art are in museums and collected worldwide. Welcome, artist Rochelle Ford. Hey, Rochelle.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, hello.
Well, we appreciate you taking a break from the studio to chat with us. There really is a sad and yet fascinating story about how you got into art. You were in your late 50s, as we noted, getting set to retire from running a big nonprofit when a close friend traveled to Chernobyl in the aftermath of the nuclear accident there. What happened to her, and how did that change your life?
She was dying of cancer, and she said to me on her deathbed, "Rochelle, you keep saying you want to be an artist. Don't die wondering. Who would think here I am at this age, you know, getting ready to pass on?" So 4.5 years after she died, I figured if the organization could get along without me, I would move on and become an artist and fulfill that last wish I had for my life.
You know, talking about it now, I mean, it all sounds like a no-brainer. You're fantastic. You're very talented and skilled at what you do. But how much of a risk was that? How much did you have to step out of your comfort zone to say, well, maybe instead of just piddling around, I am going to try to be an artist?
Well, you know, I think the last thing you teach your children is how to die peacefully, and I figured the last thing I wanted to do before I died was to be a metal sculptor, so I better get with it and get busy and get started. So it was kind of a no-brainer. I was very challenged and motivated.
So you decide to become an artist, and I think that is a desire that many of us can relate to. But what led you to want to work in metal and to weld? I mean, we're talking about one of these big gas torches that you use to cut metal, correct? Isn't that what you do?
That's what I do, 6,200 degrees of heat, cutting through steel and all different kinds of copper and aluminum and different kinds of metal. What prompted me? Because I can't draw. I can only draw with a torch, and I do pretty abstract things, sometimes realistic pieces if somebody wants a commissioned piece. But somehow I can draw with the torch and can't with the pencil. So it's a mystery, but one I'm pleased to have in my life.
Now, forgive me for trying to pull my own life into this, too, but what did your husband, what was his reaction the first time you picked up a torch and came walking into the living room and say, "Hey, I think I want to use this, honey"?
Well, you know, all of my life I've been, in addition to being a corporate executive, I was also a corporate wife. My husband played professional football and had all kinds of different corporate jobs. So when he retired to become a high school football coach, which is something he wanted to give back, he said, "Whatever you want to do, Rochelle, I will support you. I'll clean the house, I'll clean the yard, I'll cook the meals, I'll do anything. You have been a wonderful supportive wife, and it's your turn to fulfill some of your hopes and wishes and dreams." And surprisingly, he was very, very supportive and not at all worried or scared.
And you know what we find, Rochelle, when we talk to people like you, is you're doing your thing because you have to do your thing. You're not doing it to make a statement, but you are making a statement. I mean, you are smashing at least two very big stereotypes, and one is the ageism stereotype. At 76 years old, you are reinventing yourself. You are living a big, bold life. And also, a gender stereotype. I mean, most women, certainly women in their mid-70s, are not welders. Do you get a lot of attention because of that?
I certainly do. We live in the historical part of Palo Alto called Professorville, and everything's supposed to be pretty subtle color-wise. And when I became an artist, I thought, well, how's anybody going to know I changed careers? So we painted the house some really wild, wonderful colors. And I filled up the yard with metal sculptures, and they're on the house and outside, inside, everywhere. And when my husband's doing the gardening, people often, almost always, think he's the artist because they wouldn't imagine that a 5'2" woman weighing 120 pounds could be making these 3-foot-high sculptures. So these three-story-high sculptures in addition to 3-foot-high sculptures. So he said, "No, it's my wife. It's that little woman that's in that studio welding."
So in other words, Rochelle, you're the neighbor we're all terrified is going to move in next to us.
Yes, some people absolutely love the house, and those are the people I talk to. The other people who don't like it just keep on going and look at the White House across the street. So I only get the accolades, so there's most of the time I think, oh, everybody really likes what I do, and of course I make a living at it, so that's also positive reinforcement.
Yeah, we should note that you pretty much smashed the myth of the struggling artist because you found success very, very quickly selling pieces and being offered shows in a year. Before we let you go, Rochelle, because we've only got a minute left, what have you learned from your post-retirement success? Or maybe a better question is, what can we learn from your success? What's the takeaway here?
That it's never too late to fulfill your dreams, that age is just a number, not necessarily an age, and that you should not die wondering about anything that you wanted to do in your life that would make you happy and make you feel fulfilled.
But we worry. We worry about getting old. We fear aging and the oncoming of changes in life. But you've met them head on.
Well, every morning when I wake up, I say, I'll never be as young as I am today. Today's the youngest day of the rest of my life, and get up and do something fun.
Man, you keep on keeping on. Folks, if you want to see her work, you can check it out at her website. It's Metal Sculptor, metalsculptor.com. She got a pretty good domain name, and that's not surprising that she, because she's a big shot in Palo Alto. That's probably where you'd get it. Her name is Rochelle Ford. She's a metal sculptor, and she is definitely growing bolder. Thanks, Rochelle.
Next, how you can get so much more out of life by doing so much less. This is Growing Bolder.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for our latest stories, reels, and motivational memes.
Listening to Growing Bolder, I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and it's time now for our surviving and thriving interview. With the right kind of care and support and the right attitude, it is possible not only to survive life's greatest challenges, but to thrive in the aftermath. Got a big question for you now. How much time do you think you have left? We all know it. The clock is ticking. Most of us don't even want to think about it. But not only did our next guest face it head on, he did something about it by figuring out ways all of us can avoid wasting the precious time that we have.
It is the great equalizer, isn't it, Bill? Well, he's the kind of guy that's been solving problems and pretty much thinking big his entire life. Started his first business when he was just 12. By the time he started college, he'd also launched several tech companies. Then he jumped to construction and started figuring out ways to make the process of building more ecological. But then something happened that changed the entire course of his life, something that in fact nearly killed him. Let's find out more as we welcome the author of Less Doing, More Living, Ari Mizell. Hey, Ari, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
We're thrilled to have you. Thank you for your time. And let's get right to it. What happened? What changed the course of your life?
So I was working in real estate development and actually in construction. And about 8 years ago, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is a really horribly painful chronic inflammatory condition that affects your digestive tract. It's generally considered to be incurable. And I was taking a lot of meds and getting sicker and sicker and weaker and weaker until one really bad night in the hospital where I really didn't think I was going to make it out alive. And after I did, I went on this long journey of self-tracking and self-experimentation. And after about 4 months, was off my medicine and a couple months later competed in my first triathlon. And set my sights on Ironman France, which would be about a year later. And in that process, I realized that I had figured out the nutrition and the supplements and the fitness, but there was still this large element of stress in my life that was affecting my illness. And my response to that was to create a system of productivity called Less Doing.
So you're saying that with less doing, you can do more. That would have been a great title for the book, Ari, and I guess that's where exactly you got it from. What does that mean, though? You know, it's easy to say, well, I kind of get the stress part, but how do you become a master at less doing, more living?
Well, there's 9 fundamentals to the system, and it's the real sort of philosophical structural basis for it is that I teach people how to optimize, automate, and outsource everything in their lives in order to be more effective, including their health. So it really starts with freeing your mind, creating systems of automation so that you can deal with the key word that I hear all the time, which is overwhelm. I basically have become a doctor of overwhelm. And anytime someone just has too much information coming at them, too many responsibilities, they can't see through the weeds, basically. This is really about clearing your mind. That's a huge part of it, because when you give yourself that headspace, that's when you can really accomplish the things that you want to accomplish. And then, of course, the 9th fundamental, the final aspect of all of the Less Doing stuff is wellness, and that really gets into sort of biohacking and really optimizing your health, your mind, your body, so that you can be as effective as you want to be.
So without giving away too much, because I know you want to sell some books, but we don't want to frustrate our listeners, where do we begin? What's the first step that we can take in order to reduce this stress and to put us on the path to wellness that you describe?
Well, yeah, I'm happy to share this all with you. So the big thing, one of the biggest things is something that I call creating the external brain. And the idea here is that we have not evolved biologically as quickly as we have technologically. There's just, it's completely unreasonable to even try to keep up naturally with all of the information and all of the responsibilities and all the things that are happening to us all the time. So the idea with the external brain is that if you have an idea in your head, you need to get it out of your head. And there are a number of ways to do that. My favorite application for this is Evernote, which is evernote.com, and it's a free note-taking service, basically, where you can use your phone or your desktop or the web, and it all syncs across everything, and you can capture photos or text or voice recordings or web clippings, really anything you want. But the key is to really overuse a service like that. The brain is really great at coming up with ideas, but it's terrible at holding on to them. And we get bogged down in that sort of information overload. So no matter what the idea is, don't judge it. Don't hesitate. You don't have to think if it's a good or a bad idea. Just get it down somewhere. And again, I like Evernote. If you want to use a paper and pen, that's fine too. But just get those ideas out of your head so that you can get idea flow. It's a really big thing in terms of achieving the things that you want.
Boy, Ari, we've gone through a huge part of your life here in just a couple of minutes, and I don't want this to go too quickly over our heads, but you really were basically at death's door. How did being there, having this awakening about stress and health and nutrition, how has all this changed who you are and what you want to do in life?
Well, so, I mean, it couldn't change me completely, you know, and unfortunately, I have to say that, well, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, I have to say that a lot of the people that I work with and deal with, and I've replicated my results in 15 other people with Crohn's, and I've worked with dozens of people on life challenges and business issues, but everybody, almost everybody, has had some traumatic experience in their life, and that could be a chronic illness, a death in the family, being overweight, or even a car accident. You know, all of these things tend to be that sort of tipping point that make people wake up and want to change. And it's not their fault. There's just too much going on, honestly. That's really what the problem is. Everybody, in my opinion, has some sort of genius or magic in them to offer the world. And a lot of times they're in their own way because there's just too much expectation to keep on top of everything that we really couldn't without setting up systems such as these.
And Ari, how old are you these days?
I am 31.
Starting your own company at 12. You're 31 now. You're an author. What's next for you? What do you want to do?
Well, I have three kids right now. So, and they're all, I have a 2-and-a-quarter-year-old and twin 1-year-old. So I think if they could answer that, they would probably be the better ones to answer that question.
Oh, I think you answered it pretty well. You're going to be busy for the next 20 years, Ari.
Yes, I think so. And I have to say, though, I couldn't have done any of this stuff and still be happy and still spend time with my kids and be the person that I am without having all these systems sort of set up and running in the background.
Well, and hopefully being around those kids will inspire you to want to make an even bigger difference. We didn't talk much about how you ecologically changed construction, but there's a need for brains like yours and for people the way that you think, Ari. You've contributed to society in great ways already, and we can't wait to see what's next from you. What a great and inspiring talk with Ari Mizell. Remember, the book is called Less Doing, More Living. Find out more about it and its author at lessdoing.com.
Well, sadly, that is it for now. But
already?
Yeah, it is. But remember, Growing Bolder does not stop here. It never stops, folks. You'll find hundreds more interviews just like the ones you've heard today with people who decided to make a change, and then you can witness the amazing results for yourself that came out of that.
Ordinary people trying things they never thought possible. Celebrities taking risks they never imagined. Regular folks taking control of their health, finances, and their lives, all at growingbolder.com.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved.
This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming road, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I, proud neath heated brow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Half right prejudice leap before, rip down all hate I scream. Lies that life is black and white, spoke from my skull I dream. Romantic flanks of musketeers, foundation